This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Scientists have determined that at least 27 different species of humans have evolved on planet Earth, yet only one still survives. Acclaimed science writer Chip Walter explores why in his fascinating new book, Last Ape Standing, The 7 Million Year Story of How and Why We Survived. He talks with Thane Maynard this morning.
Hi, Chip. This is Thane Maynard.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well, and I want to compliment you on your book, Last Ape Standing. Really, really good. Told in a
thank
compelling
you.
Manner, and that's a neat thing.
Oh, thank you. That's music to every writer's ears.
Well, you know, it's a complex story. As you point out, it's a 7 million year long story to talk about early human relatives and then how did it end up that humans survived while others, like Neanderthals, fell by the wayside.
Right.
Tell a bit about that, because I thought you told it in a neat way, the idea that we have a longer childhood, all those pieces.
Right. Well, I started thinking about this, it actually came out of a previous book that I had written. In the course of the research, I found that there were all these other human species. You know, these weren't simply, you know, other primates like chimpanzees or gorillas. That these were highly sophisticated, different kinds of species that had lived and died along with our direct ancestors, as well as with us more recently. And you know, that makes you wonder. Well, if you look around, we're the only ones left. And you have to ask yourself, well, why did that happen? How did that happen? And I didn't really have the answer until I started to look into it, and there had to be some reason why that was the case. And in the course of the research that I did, you know, I wanted to tell the stories of these other species and these other humans so you could kind of get an idea of what it was that made us different. And ultimately, what I found was, at least in my mind, the main difference is that we have this long childhood, and it is during that long childhood that we become the individuals that we are, you know, that stamps us, each one of us, as, you know, the a person that's different from the other people around us. At the same time, we're, you know, we're all members of the same species, and it's that individuality and creativity that come with it that ultimately enabled us to make it whenever these other creatures didn't. And they were all very, you know, many of them extremely intelligent, you know, smart, creative creatures on their own.
Well, I certainly know of living species. We have the longest childhood or longest period of time till maturity or sexual maturity. Running a zoo, you know, breeding animals is a lot of what we do. We're kind of like a dairy farm for wildlife. And,
right.
You know, gorillas of all the animals that we have at our zoo have the longest youth, and it's about twice as fast as ours. They'll be sexually mature at 6 to 7 years. Maybe there's some whales that take longer. Heck, I don't know, but or some sort of a clam. But I think we do have the longest childhood and longest adolescence, and that's an important part of our development, as you point out in the book. But also you do a good job portraying these earlier hominids and in some ways how similar they were to us. You know, we think of Neanderthals as cavemen, but they harnessed fire. And they obviously had large brains and must have had communication, though we aren't sure what it sounded like. If you live
right.
in a group, you end up learning to communicate.
Right, right. No, they were clearly very bright, and so were the so-called hobbits that lived in Indonesia. And there were probably other forms of Homo erectus, and there are now the Denisovans that we found that lived up in Siberia that, you know, we have to guess were probably at least as sophisticated as Neanderthals. And, yeah, Neanderthals, the evidence is that they were thinking symbolically, which is huge. I mean, it's really that they had some forms of art. They were extremely good tool makers. They were excellent hunters. Obviously, they had to be able to communicate with one another. So it's all kind of amazing. I mean, I think the thing that did Neanderthals in was not only was their childhood shorter than ours, but it was actually shrinking towards the last several millennia of their run. But on top of it, they never really reached a large population. And I would maintain one reason they didn't was because they didn't have this kind of individuality or that length of time in their childhood to really develop some of the additional creative, inventive abilities that we acquired.
Well, you know, it's interesting thinking of how relatively quickly, not only did Homo sapiens emerge from Africa and, if you will, take over the world, which we have, in just what's estimated to be typically 70,000 years, 80,000 years.
Yeah, but, yeah, even possibly less.
But even with the Neanderthals, you know, all of this is relatively new and fascinating. And I know in your book you talk about the phenomenon of these early humans. One thing we're good at is walking, and literally walking out of Africa and walking all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think that, that we walked to Australia, which is, you know, halfway around the planet. But you, we also, I think, tend to forget the enormous lengths of time that we're talking about. I mean, even if you assume that we didn't leave Africa and probably went in several waves, but, you know, the last big wave was probably around, you know, 50,000 years ago. And 50,000 years, I mean, it's been 2,000 years since Caesar ruled, you know, the Roman Empire, and that's 25, you know, times longer than that. So we just, you know, tend to forget that if you just couple, you know, covering a few miles a year, you can get to almost anywhere on the planet, and we did. I mean, it's really kind of mind-boggling. I mean, how do you get to Hawaii or, you know, Easter Island, which are these little tiny specks of land in the middle of enormous oceans, but somehow we managed to get there.
Well, exactly. And I know some of those islands people have lived on a relatively short amount of time, the ones closer to shore perhaps longer. But
right.
I know in the book it talks about, in, for instance, New Zealand or Madagascar, people only lived there less than 2,000 years.
Yeah. It's, I guess probably what ultimately made it possible for us to get there is that we figured out how to get in a ship and to sail it, which is, of course, a lot more complex than simply walking from place to place. But we kind of came out of Africa. It looks like we came out, you know, by the Levant, which is, you know, in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there we split. We went up north and headed into Western Europe, and that's when we first met up with Neanderthals. And then the other branch of us, or probably multiple branches, kind of hugged the coastline of Asia and headed toward India and Southeast Asia, and eventually all the way down to Indonesia and over to Australia.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you mentioned the Neanderthals again, this idea that often hits the popular press that when humans interacted with Neanderthals, we were similar enough that there was a chance for some interbreeding.
Yeah, we did. I mean, there's now, I mean, it would have been heresy 5 years ago to say that we had interbred with other species, but I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if you just go to a bar on a Friday night, do we really wonder if we would have bred with other species? You know, it would just seem to be, it seems to me that if there was enough similarity that was inevitable, that it would happen. And sure enough, a few years ago, an analysis of Neanderthal DNA and our DNA, and by the way, Denisovan DNA, indicates that we all made it, and that we have, if you're from Europe, you probably have some Neanderthal DNA in you, and if you're from, you know, the like Polynesia or Micronesia, you might have some Denisovan DNA in you. So it's there was probably quite a bit of that going on. That's at least my guess. I think we'll find more of that as we get more information.
And interestingly, evidently not as much in African populations, because the flow tended to be out, not coming all the way back.
Right, yeah. I mean, well, there's, yeah, if your ancestry is that you are from Africa, then you probably have no Neanderthal DNA in you, because you just kind of didn't make your way through Europe. Whereas that was the only place that Neanderthals were living, and the same thing, and they were also in parts of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're from Africa, you probably don't have any Neanderthal DNA. But if you have a little bit of red hair or some freckles or, you know, blondish hair, there's a possibility that that came by way of your Neanderthal ancestors.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a fantastic journey, no doubt. And
yes,
your book does a great job at making it a compelling story. So it's not
that easy
to compress 7 million years of change into one book. So good job with that.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was a pleasure to write it, and a pleasure to get a chance to talk about it.
You bet. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes. If you come to Cincinnati, come visit the zoo. I'll show you around.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Absolutely. Well, I'm in Pittsburgh, so I'm not that far away. I hope I can get over there.
Plan on it. All right, Chip, thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you.
My guest was Chip Walker, author of the terrific new book, Last Ape Standing. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.